Welcome to the Trigator Podcast, where budgets are balanced, debt gets destroyed, and alligator expenses get fed before they bite. I'm your host, Nate Tanner. The Trigator Podcast is sponsored by Trigator. Go to Trigator.com and sign up for the free trial of the Trigator app to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Trigator, you can enjoy life more and worry about money less. Okay, yesterday we had a lot of fun talking about being frugal, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about some tips and things on being frugal. And we got to remember, when we're talking about being frugal, we really need to talk about apples to apples, okay? Yesterday we talked a little bit about the example of where the tomatoes that the owner of the restaurant used, and that was, even though it was still a tomato, the quality of those tomatoes wasn't where it needed to be, and we ended up spending more as far as things go. And one of the other problems that can happen if you go on the side of cheap as opposed to frugal is that you can run into overuse when you're being cheap. And I just want to tell a little story to kind of give that as an example. My parents and I used to run a seasonal concession stand together, and it was at a corn maze that would run from mid-September until the end of October. And it was really, really fun. It was a great time to be close to my parents. And we ran this little concession stand together where we'd sell, you know, just basic things, you know, nachos and hot dogs and hot chocolate and just any sort of concession. And one of the things that my dad went and did is he went and he decided, I'm going to buy some new napkins that we're going to provide for our customers. And he went and he bought in bulk 10,000 napkins. Now, you'd think that this would be a good idea because we go through a lot of napkins, we need them and such. But the napkins that he bought were paper thin and small. And what we found is that as people were using napkins, they were taking about 5 napkins just to meet their needs. And we ended up spending more in napkins than we needed to because since we didn't have great napkins, people were using more. So as you're looking at your budget and looking at things, when you're wanting to be frugal, it doesn't necessarily mean buying the cheapest possible thing, okay? You want to look at the use of that item and you want to look at the life of that item. So I'm going to pose a question to you. Let's say that you're looking for gas, okay? Gas for your car. And you have gas at, let's say, Costco, that is going to cost you 10 cents a gallon less than if you went to Chevron. Where do you go and get gas? Well, of course, you go to Costco because gas is gas. Where you go, it's going to be the same gas. It's going to power your car right, and it's going to take care of you, right? So you really want to look at apples to apples comparisons when you're trying to be frugal. You don't want to look at getting things that are going to be, in the long run, costing you more money because they get overused or because the quality is so bad that you have to replace them quickly. Okay. Now, I do have a few more tips that I'd like to talk about in helping you to be frugal. And the first one is, just because something's on sale doesn't mean that it's a good buy. The world we live in, you get hit with advertisements constantly. You are always going to be hearing things. I was watching a basketball game just the other day, and I noticed that not only are there ads on the backboards, there's ads, they have a camera that shoots down onto the player from above the backboard. And when it pans down to watch the ball go into the basket, there's an ad there on the top of the backboard. There's also ads on the front of the court. And it got so bad when I was noticing the number of ads that come in on the basketball court itself, the TV station had superimposed some ads on the basketball court itself that weren't there before. So we're getting bombarded with places that are trying to get us to buy. And one thing that they try to do is put things on sale or give a perceived sale just to try to get us to buy. And they'll try to create this idea of a need that really doesn't exist in order for us to buy. When I was growing up, I remember a time where my dad found what he said was a great deal. And It was called a Health Rider. I don't know if anyone remembers those, but they were these exercise machines that you would sit on, and they had handles, and you'd basically pull the handles and push up all at once and kind of do a rocking motion almost. And you would ride on the Health Rider, and it would give you some cardio workout and do some supposedly good things for your body. And he found this and he thought, oh, this is such a great deal. I better buy it because, you know, it's a great exercise equipment. They're really popular right now, and it's going to be great. Well, he bought it, and it ended up sitting in our garage, and it sat and it gained dust, and it sat and it sat and it sat, and we never really used it. So the question is, did he really find a great deal just because it was on sale? Of course not. It was something that we didn't use. So why would we get something that we're not going to use just because it's on sale, right? All right, the next tip that I want to talk a little bit about is looking for better deals on things that you buy or pay for regularly. And as an example for this, I want to choose what I did with my internet company not too long ago. I, of course, need to have internet for the things that I do, for my work, for the different activities and such. And so internet is a part of my life that I need and an expense that I need to have. And part of that is I do like having high-speed internet. I don't want to have dial-up. I want to have a nice, quick broadband. And what happened was my service said, oh, well, we're going to raise your rates. It's time. We're going to raise all your rates. And I didn't like that, and I was really upset, and I didn't really want to shop around for others because I was very happy with the service that I was receiving, and the other providers that I had in the area weren't as good as far as the service. So I was trying to think about what could I do. So I called up the company and I said, hey, my rates are going up. I don't like this. What kind of deal can you do to keep me as a customer? And it took a little bit of work because initially they're like, oh, well, we're raising rates on everyone. This is how it is. And I say, all right, well, let me talk to your disconnect team and we'll see what we can figure out. And they put me over to the disconnect team and I said, hey, I would rather not disconnect, but if my rates are going to go up like this, then I'm going to have to search for another option. And as I was talking with them, they said, oh, well, looks like you've been with us for several years. You've been a really great customer. So here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to get you onto a new promotion that we have that will get you a lower price, and we're going to keep that and give it to you for the next 3 years. And then they told me the price, and I was like, oh, you got it. Well, I'll stick around. We'll make that work. And I was a very, very happy customer. And just by calling the company and working with them and saying, hey, I need a better rate, they were able to find me something that lowered my cost, and I was able to pay less for the internet than I would have otherwise. Another example that I'd like to bring up for looking for better deals on the things you buy regularly are particularly, let's look at things like groceries, household items, and some of those things. Now, why would you go to a store and pay a dollar more for, let's say, salt? We talked about salt yesterday. Than if you went to another store and had the exact same salt that was a dollar less. What's the rationale in that? Again, we're looking at an apples to apples. It's the same salt, and it's cheaper at this other store. Of course I'm going to go to the other store. And that's being frugal. I'm not being cheap. I'm being frugal. I am being very, very careful with the money that I spend. And it's not a matter of just finding the cheapest thing possible. It's a matter of saying, I have this much money. I am going to be careful how I spend it. Even those who are very, very wealthy are frugal. And they will go and they'll look for the best deal possible. Think about it. Do you think that when Jeff Bezos just recently purchased a brand new home, it was something like $34 million, I think. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was this huge home that he bought. Do you think he just said, oh, I've got $34 million, I'm going to buy it? No way. He is going to go in and negotiate and try to get that for the best price possible. Even though he has the money, he is going to go in and try to get the best price possible. And that's what we want to do with being frugal. We want to get the best price possible for the things that we are going to buy. All right? And it's not a matter of being cheap. It's not a matter of saying, I'm going to go and eat just beans and rice. It's a matter of saying, if I'm going to go and buy turkey, I want to get the best price on the turkey that I buy. And I just love generic brands on things, because there's several generic brands that you get the exact same quality as you would for the name brand item. And we talked about salt as an example, but there are plenty of other things. I get store brand deli turkey, and it tastes just as good as the turkey that's the name brand. So there's things that you can get that are the same for a cheaper price. Now, there are some things that I don't skimp on. For example, and this goes back to my childhood more, I won't skimp on toilet paper. All right. When I was growing up, my family, we bought the cheapest, bulkiest, single ply toilet paper that you can imagine. And I hated it. I could not stand it. And so I don't skimp on toilet paper. I make sure that I get the stuff that I like. And that's okay. Being frugal does not mean that we can't have things that we want. It means that we are being careful with how we spend it. Now, when I get toilet paper, I make sure that I get it in bulk and I get it for a great price, but I still get the toilet paper that I want. And that's one of the keys to being frugal, is that we're still getting things that we want, getting things that we need. We're just ensuring that we pay the best possible price for them. And that's how to be frugal. Get the best deal you can at the best price for the things you want. All right, we have some questions that we're going to get to now. Our first question, and oh, before I get into that first question, if you do have questions for us, you can submit them to podcast@tregator.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go out to our Facebook site. While you're there, make sure you like us, and you can post your questions there, and we'll see about getting them answered. The first question here is from James. The question is, we live with my in-laws, they pay the mortgage, and my wife and I pay all other taxes and bills. My mother-in-law told us that she wants us to pay half the mortgage, but won't add our names to the house. How do I say no in a polite way? Well, James, I don't think you're going to like my answer with this one, because you can say no in a polite way, but the reason that you're saying no isn't because you're not on the title, okay? Part of what happens with title of the house is that they've obtained a mortgage for that house, okay? And the mortgage is in their name, and they are the ones that are financially liable for it. And you living with them does not mean that you have title to the house. It means that you are their tenant. And as a tenant, they can charge you rent. So what I would suggest is, rather than necessarily saying no, talk to your mother-in-law and see if you can work out a good rental agreement. For example, if you're paying your own utilities and such, say, hey, we'll pay you more, but can you help out by covering utilities? And kind of try to give a little bit of a give and take there. And if you're going to be treated like a tenant and pay rent, then they need to act like a landlord and meet you on some of the other things, okay? Because that's really the relationship that you have with them, is that you're the tenant and they're the landlord. And by you paying half of what the mortgage is, that doesn't mean that you get to have title to the house. The title of the house is the person that has the financial liability for that house. And ultimately, that's your mother-in-law. She's the one that carries the mortgage. It's her name. And so she's going to be on the title and in that manner. So now you can do a refi and put yourselves on the mortgage if she wants to do that. But I wouldn't recommend that. I think you'd be better in a tenant-renter relationship in the time being, because I'm sure that you want to get your own house someday. So, sorry, James. I wish that I had a better answer for you that you liked, but tenant-renter relationship, and so you need to treat it as such. Our next question is from Mark. He says, my neighbor asked me to co-sign on a loan for his son's new car. Should I do that? In a word, no. I mean, you got to remember that even though you may have a great relationship with that neighbor, they may be a good friend, you may go to football games together, basketball, you may have neighborhood cookouts together and barbecues, and you may be really, really close. But really, when he's asking you to co-sign on his son's new car, first, it means that he doesn't have the credit to be able to co-sign on the car. And it means that the son doesn't have the credit to sign on his own car. So you're essentially taking on financial responsibility for your neighbor's son's car. And if he stops paying, they're going to come after you for that. And you don't want that. You don't want to have that stress. And really, that's ultimately going to hurt your relationship, because if he stops paying, then your neighborhood cookouts are not going to be that much fun anymore, and it's going to cause more stress. So I think there's an easier way of just saying, sorry, I care for you, you're a good friend, but we're not going to sign on any debt. And good luck with that one, Mark. I hope that things will work out. Last question is from Carrie. She says, what are some easy ways to make a few $100s? Now, I've asked myself that same question before, and there's a few things that you can do. One of the things that I love are the gig jobs that are out there, the little freelancer jobs, the independent contractor jobs, where you're able to do things at your own pace, and you're able to do them when you want and how long you want. And some examples that I've brought up in the past are things like a rideshare, where you sign up and you drive for Uber or Lyft or one of those other rideshares that are out there. And it's a really easy way to make some quick money, because you're just driving people around, you know? And if you have a car, you're able to make money. I've also done some things with some delivery services, such as DoorDash, where you're delivering food. And the great thing about all of these different gig jobs is that you do it when you want. And it's very, very easy. You do have to go through a background check and a few things like that, but they're really, really easy to do and get started. And it's just a matter of logging in on your phone, and then you're able to start getting to work. And I'll tell you what one of my most favorite ones is, and this one is hard to get into because it's so popular and works so well. But Amazon has a service called Amazon Flex, and it is fantastic, but they only open it up to new drivers every so often, and you have to get on a wait list for it. But the neat thing about Amazon Flex is that when you sign up for blocks of time to deliver Amazon packages, and you go to their distribution center, you fill up your car with packages, and then you go and you drop them off. And it's great because you do it at your own pace. You are able to go in and you can sit and jam to tunes in your car while you're doing it, and you're just do the deliveries. And it's pretty low stress. The only stress you have is finding the addresses as far as things go. So I really, really love Amazon Flex. The other great thing is that you know exactly how much you're going to make for the block that you sign up for. And that's something you don't get with some of these other services, where, like with Uber and Lyft, it's dependent on people basically hiring you for a ride. With Amazon Flex, you know, for this 3-hour block that I'm going to go and do deliveries, I'm going to make this much money. And I really like that about that one. But again, that one's a little harder to get onto because it is in high demand and such a great gig job. Once again, you can send your questions over to us at podcast@Tregator.com. And as always, this podcast is sponsored by Tregator. Go to Tregator.com to sign up for your free trial of the Tregator app, to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Tregator, you can enjoy life more and worry about money less. Please remember to subscribe to us. We would love to have you join us for all of our episodes so that you never miss an episode of the Tregator podcast. Please do. And also visit our sponsor. There is a link on your podcast player that will take you right out to Tregator, where you can sign up for that free trial and get started on that path to financial peace of mind. Thanks again for listening. And as always, have a good one.